Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our 12 Tradition Workshop. Please join me in a prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword as it appeared in the AA tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. My back hurts right now, so I'm sitting. Give it a little rest. A couple announcements. The House of Hope, which is the organization that I've supported personally for the last 25 years with my efforts at being on the board and other kinds of activities, and in fact are the recipients of my first book, the guidebook to the 12 steps out of the big book, they own that book. They, right from the beginning, they get all the royalties on that book. They probably generate $600 or $700 a month as a result of that. That's one of the reasons they are so supportive of me and the work that I do in terms of photocopy work and that kind of thing. They're holding a talent show October 12th. It's really fun. People in recovery who have been, in fact, interviewed, vetted, that they actually have some talent. Yes, you know how we are, a little delusional sometimes. And so there will be, 10 or 12 acts, I believe. Saturday, I think, October 12th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's a Sunday, thank you. There are these little red postcards back there. You just take them and follow instruction if you're interested in going. The tickets are $25 a piece unless you want a VIP. It's at the Norris Theater in Palos Verdes, so it's a very classy kind of event, and I think you'd be quite pleased if you're interested. Also, for those of you who are not receiving emails from my constant contact, you know who you are because you're not receiving them. That means you're not in my database. Whether you think you should or whatever, it's evidence you're not in the database. If you want to be, go to my website and you can just register right there. It's automatic. All right. So you can go to the website, or you can give me a piece of paper with all the contact information, especially email, and we'll take care of that. But I would prefer that you go directly to my website. Susie.
I have a list back here, if any, that I've been giving Jan for.
You have a list of what?
Of email contact information if people want to sign up on here as well.
Oh, if you want to sign up, she has a form for that. Yeah, okay. Great. Thank you. For those of you who might have been interested in going to the workshop that Dr. Alan Berger and I are doing this Saturday in Pasadena, and you haven't RSVP'd, it's too late, all right? They're already oversold and they're taking waiting kind of reservations. So if you're interested, you could still call and go on a waiting list or try just dumb luck and show up. But it's already oversubscribed. I guess when you do something for free, people really respond. Please, let's use the microphone. If you're going to bring up a question or a comment of any kind, please use the microphone so that we can have it recorded. And you know that, and I'm announcing officially, that we are recording these sessions. If you don't want to be recorded, don't talk.
Beautiful.
If you want to talk and you don't want your name, don't give it. All right? It's really straightforward. We are recording the session. My comments and any comments that we can pick up from you, that's why I'm really suggesting strongly, and I don't care how powerful you think your voice is. All right? It's a very large room. Use the microphone. All right, but also, I think we got bogged down a little bit last time in some sharing of some experience and some amplification of other experiences, and I don't want to put any restrictions on you. I want you, though, to manage your input that you give us by questions or comments or highlights to make sure that you filter it through. Is this relevant to exactly what we're talking about, and will it help the discussion? Is it on point with what we're talking about right now, or is it from 15 minutes ago, or is it anticipating 15 minutes from now? All I'm saying is, let's be really thoughtful so that we can, in fact, try to engage in a good, substantial discussion about the tradition and not get caught up in a lot of bureaucratic detail that might be good for a informal conference but isn't so supportive of what we're doing here, is to have a broad feel and a deepest feel as we can have for the tradition, its meaning literally, but it's also its meaning in the spirit. So just manage yourselves. I won't attempt to manage you. I can't anyway, right? Be realistic. I've handed out another comparison that I've developed from my experience in conducting small informal workshops on the traditions, and you might find it helpful as we go through each of the traditions. I handed out once one before, which talked about the principles of the tradition. It's one of those that's in this format. And then this one here is about the substantial substance, the spiritual substance of anonymity is a sacrifice. And it talks about the sacrifice that is you're invited to with each of the traditions, what we give up and what we keep. These are just personal reflections of mine as I was studying the traditions and going through previous workshops. But I think that they might be helpful to you to stimulate your thinking about the tradition itself. Also, if you're interested in an expanded version of the meditation practice, in the step workshop, when I talk about step 11, I stay primarily on the material from the Big Book and the 12 and 12 with a little introduction concerning my contemplative practice and exposure and experience to that through centering prayer. I've been invited by a retreat center in Palos Verdes, Mary and Joseph, to do a half a day, 1 to 5 o'clock, Saturday, November 1st, just on centering prayer. It's not, I'm not coming from a perspective of 12-step at all, although obviously there will be some of that in there because that's who I am. But they've asked me to present a training on centering prayer for those people who are not in 12-step or necessarily. All right. Now, it's everybody's welcome, but it's going to be geared to the general community of people who are interested in a contemplative practice, especially meditation via the centering prayer mechanism. So let's start with the traditions. I like to give kind of a little context as we're looking at the traditions, contrasting the traditions with the step work that we've done. The steps name our personal weaknesses and deal with these in the individual. The traditions name these same personal weaknesses, but that affect the group. They diminish, these weaknesses diminish the community strength. The traditions deal with character defects of the group. The individuals have character defects, and when we get together, it's character defects on steroids, isn't it? Yeah. The same instincts for survival gone awry in the individual that we looked at in step four are the instincts for survival that go awry in the group. We are a fellowship of defects. In fact, I think I've mentioned before, Ernie Kurtz has written a book called Spirituality of Imperfection. It's a bunch of stories about people on a spiritual journey, and they find it through their wounds and their defects and the cracks in the vase. Without the steps, the individual gets sicker. The steps act or give us the ability to perform acts contrary to our own will, especially through accountability. Without the traditions, the group gets sicker. The traditions are acts contrary to the group will through the group conscience, and we'll be talking some about that tonight. The steps and the traditions are guidelines, steps and traditions are guidelines to humility. And the purpose is union with God through people. Union with God directly through the steps, through people, through the traditions. So I like to kind of warm it up with those kinds of comments. And then we take a look at the assignment list. And let's begin looking at the assignments here for tradition three. And the first suggestion is that you read and highlight language of the heart. Now, oh, I'm sorry. Tradition two. Tradition two is what we're on. Thank you. Look at me, just ripping ahead. All right, tradition two, thank you. I saw the panic of where have I been? Did I miss a week? Yeah, no, you didn't miss a week. I just missed a loop. All right, so I have on order more of the brochures, the group, more of the brochures, the traditions illustrated, and more of the books, The Language of the Heart. I'm assuming that they're going to be ready on Thursday. I will be picking them up and bringing them up next Tuesday. Meanwhile, I'm under the impression, and I think we had this discussion, that you can download this or at least look at it through the web. And we, you know how to do that, and if you don't, ask somebody who does, not me. And so let's take a look at Tradition 2 in the Language of the Heart. And what I'd like to do is, it's only a page and a half. I would like to take a look at the first paragraph and ask, are there any highlights in that paragraph? I don't want to read it because I'm assuming that you've done that work, you've read it, and that you've highlighted it. That's the whole point. I don't want us to give you an assignment and then do the assignment here. That will train you into laziness. I want to assume that you have, in fact, done the assignment. All right? So let's take a look at page 77 in The Language of the Heart And is there anybody that has a highlight on that page that they would like to comment on? I encourage you to use the mic, but I won't require it. Comments on Language of the Heart, page 77, first paragraph. No highlights. Okay. Say what? No, I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to go back on that. But the key points that I have, sooner or later, every AA person, the word isn't in there, but I say it, comes to depend upon a power greater than himself. And then later on the next page, he contrasts that with the every AA group follows the same cycle of development, coming to rely on God through the group conscience. And in the first paragraph, it's relying on God through guidance in meditation. That's the first paragraph, first line. Sooner or later, every AA comes to depend upon a power greater than himself. He finds that the God of his understanding is not only a source of strength, but also a source of positive direction. It's in italics, because Bill's experience was looking for guidance in meditation. That was the training he got in the Oxford group. A new inner security with a sense of destiny and purpose are the highlights that I have on that page. I'm going to turn the page, and unless Sarah has a comment. See the connection between the first and the second paragraph. He talks about the impact of the steps on illuminating and removing the character defects of the individual through conscious contact with God. And then in the second paragraph, he talks about the process of eliminating the character defects of the group through the group conscience. Yeah.
And in this way, the group becomes better able to receive right direction for its own affairs.
So it's the greater power, and that's in capital G, capital P, the greater power is then working through a clear group conscience. Thank you, Sarah. All right, how about the balance of that material? Anybody have any highlights on that page? George. Yay, George uses the microphone. I hope it's on.
Hi, George Brown, alcoholic.
It's on.
I actually saw something in the beginning of the first paragraph on page 78, you know, the AA group follows the same cycle of development. It doesn't mention inventory specifically, but this is one of the elements of development for the alcoholic, the individual alcoholic. And I became aware many years into sobriety that there is something called a group inventory.
Yes.
And that is a process by which a group tries to figure out where it's going. I mean, how are we doing with regard to helping the newcomer and commitments and so on? And so yeah. I see that in here, although it's not stated specifically.
Yeah. Thank you, George. And it's an area that really is a very healthy study if you're interested in improving the culture of your group, is to take a look at the pamphlet on the group and specifically the area that describes group conscience and group inventory. And I know there are some groups that do an inventory. It's a business meeting. Outside of the group time, it's a special meeting for anybody who's interested in the group to do a group inventory. And sometimes it takes 2 or 3 hours to have that discussion. But it talks about how can we be really helpful to the people who come into our group. Very healthy discussion. Thank you, George. Anybody else have any comments on that? Please, thank you.
Hi, Don. I have a question.
Hi, Don.
Jen?
Jen, yes.
Meditation, it helps to know what the group conscience would be, but other than that, I don't know.
As applied to the family, you're
family
saying.
Or friends,
friends
a group
or
of
relationships
people where there's no
well,
structure.
Well, some of the questions are like that.
They are, but yeah. And the discussion we have not really talked about.
Last time we got sort of caught into a lot of discussion about the literal and the spiritual sort of connotations of the traditions and shared a lot of experience, and we actually didn't get to the questions, which I think will be very fruitful discussion here. So that's why I made the pre-announcements that I did. So we will be looking at that, yeah. Thank you. Let's just keep that up here, and then if people aren't willing or able to come up to the microphone, we'll just have my version of Vanna White here. All right. Alcohol will discipline him, is I have that underlined. The collective conscience of the group will, given time, almost surely demonstrate its perfect dependability. And here's the key to tradition two. It's tied to step two. Tradition two and step two are very tied together. Ask yourself, what is it that you believe about God? Is there such a thing? How does it operate? What's its role in the group? How does it function in the group? And Bill has a line at the bottom. A loving God as God may express God's self in our group conscience. Really, do you believe that? Do you believe that the spirit underneath human existence, and I'll be as broad as that in my sort of poetic concept. Do you believe the spirit underneath the life force that is in every individual, do you believe that spirit is the creator and the source? Do you believe that that's divinity? Do you believe that's the mystery, the holy, the sacred God as we understand him or don't? Right? Because that's what this is based on. And so you really have to challenge yourself about what decision did you make in step two about God in context of then whether you trust the group process or not. Because it's based on that. That it's not just a series of individuals. It's a network that's held together by the glue of the Spirit that generates the force and the source of the conscience. Nicole, you want to hand the mic to me? Dang, your hair's getting shorter. Yeah, really. You're gonna next time you go to my barber.
You have more than I do. Hi. I'm moving on to this just a little bit, but I think it really coincides. I only underlined one thing in this, which says minority ideas get thoughtful attention. And I didn't really see anything in the 12 and 12 nor language of the heart that specifically mentioned the minority. It was really just when I started reading this. And I feel like that's where the entire experience of God and in this comes from.
Is listening to all people, because it's not the it's not the majority of members, it's the Spirit speaking through all members and each member. And there's the sacredness of the individual member, that minority member that Nicole is talking about. And she brought us to the illustrated, but before we do that, let's take a look at what are the traditions and those questions that we have with the worksheet. If you have that marked out, it has the short form and the long form of the traditions, and then three questions. What did I hear? What does it mean? What are the implications for my life? That's a worksheet to help guide you and keep you engaged in this discussion, even though you don't verbally participate. You can, in fact, from a thoughtful standpoint, be listening to what's being said and perhaps have your own reflection that you record on this worksheet. The short form of the second tradition is for our group purpose. There is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as God may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Then the long form, which actually turns out to be shorter than the short form, which is, yeah, it's really curious, isn't it? For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as God may express himself in our group conscience. All right? And so let's take a look at the legacy, I mean, excuse me, the illustrated pamphlet. Does anybody have any other observations connected to the second tradition from this pamphlet? George.
Hi, George, alcoholic again. Well, to build on what Nicole was saying, minority opinion is an extremely important element of the group conscience. Most people don't have any opportunity to experience this, but you know, I've been in general service, and we do have long, loving discussions of various issues after which votes are taken. And whenever there is a vote taken, after that, the minority gets to express opinion. And there may be one minority. That person gets to express the opinion. And at that point, the discussion is opened up again. And what happens in some cases is truly incredible. As a result of the minority opinion being expressed, the majority opinion changes as a result of a subsequent vote. Mm-hmm. And that is truly an example of the of the Spirit of God at work, because people are actually listening, which is not like what happens in real life, probably. People are actually listening, and they hear something that they hadn't thought of before. To get back to sort of an earlier thing, do you believe God is at work here? I think people in Alcoholics Anonymous sort of are trying in a way that people out in the regular world aren't. I mean, we have a program, most of us really try to live by it, so we bring a more spiritual approach to what we're doing than I think we would or other people would on the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah. And, oh, please.
Just an alcoholic. I've been to a lot of meetings, and I notice there's always an ebb and a flow in a meeting, and sometimes there's a group conscious, and the people who normally show up aren't really there, and the group conscience gets decided by a bunch of people that have nothing to do with the meeting. Mm-hmm. And usually the whole thing gets screwed up, and over time it works itself out. But do you believe that God is working even in a bad situation where people aren't constantly going to the meeting and constantly caring for the meeting?
What would be any other explanation?
Well, I've seen coups.
I understand, what else? How else would you interpret? Well,
I would see it as that's more of a will thing than a loving.
It's group will run riot. Yeah. Absolutely.
And when that happens, I have to let it go. You know,
apparently.
But I can't get upset about it.
Right. Yeah, thank you. All right, so I don't want to get buried in this discussion, all right? So if you have something that's going to move the discussion forward, yes. But if it's going to be more of the same experience, I'd rather just move on. So I'll recognize you, Dave.
Just a quick observation. I just love the...
You're going to use the mic?
Just a quick observation. I love the way the guy is trying to like control it, and he knows best. And then the group conscience and the way they described it here, down boy.
Yeah.
You know, it was just lovely. So I just thought that was very humorous.
Yeah. Well,
an observation.
It illustrates visually what really happens is the deflation of the ego of the individual through the group conscience. Exactly. Please.
Hi, I'm Sandy, and back in the language of the heart, the thing that was so interesting to me when I read this was that in that first paragraph, they're talking about the individual learns, he makes his mistakes, and he learns from daily experience what his remaining character defects are and becomes ever more willing that they be removed. But then it says, and every a group follows that same cycle of development. And that was something that I hadn't really thought of before, that a group is learning and growing and expanding and just, changing
just
in
like
the same
individual.
Way that I am.
There you go. Yeah, and that's the direct analogy for it, too. Kim.
Hi, Kim Al-Anon. So what I hear today is this, but they must always remember that they serve for the good of all without authority over any. And, you know, this really, what we talked about last week with humility and bringing it back to that. And also, it brings me back to step one where I'm powerless, but I'm not helpless. I have a voice, and I can speak what I want, and I have a vote on that. So I bring my humility to that. Yeah. I don't bring my self-will to it.
Yeah.
And it's like when I make an outreach call in Al-Anon or when I take an outreach call, I might hear something that I might not have thought of.
Yeah.
You know, the faith in that. And even at work, I use that when I'm sitting in a room full of people trying to make something, you know, a project go the way we want to go. I come in with my self-will, my ego, but I have to remember, like, okay, this is my choice in how I want to speak this, but I have to be open to hear everyone and ultimately, you know, go to God that maybe I don't know everything, you know, but I'm not helpless. I still get to have my voice. Yeah. And that's what this is what tradition 2 gives to me. It says I can have a voice, I can practice it, but I practice it with humility.
Well, at the same time, I'm powerless, but I am fully responsible. It's another takeoff of what you're saying. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you. Less.
Less alcoholic. I also highlighted the phrase that the lady before me just mentioned, but what I saw was, and then it says, AA is both a democracy, and in Bill's word, a benign anarchy. Hmm. It's a group that elects its own officers who have no power to order anybody to do anything. And when I reread the highlight, what came to me was, just like the group conscience or the group power is the ultimate authority for how the group runs, ultimately, God or our higher power is the ultimate authority about how we should live our lives or perceive the world. Yeah. But even though it's the ultimate power, it doesn't order or dictate us. We still have free will to do what we want.
Yep.
So there's a similarity in why there's the possibility of perpetuating an AA group because of the benign aspect and the lack of authority to order any of its members to do anything.
Yeah. In the same way we sit in meditation for guidance, we sit in group conscience for guidance. In meditation, if we get the guidance, it's merely a suggestion, as Les pointed out, for the group. But for the individual, we have free will, and we can always say no. Now, there will be consequences if we say yes, and there will be consequences if we say no. We get to choose our consequences. Yeah, exactly. Please.
Nicole, Al-Anon, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but it is the conflict resolution using the 12 traditions for Al-Anon. And it's pretty awesome. And
conflict resolution for using the traditions in Al-Anon. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Well, you can have this because I have another one. So tradition 2 says group conscience, mutual respect. And then it has a little blurb, but if you flip it over, and the nice thing is it's very much from all relationships perspective, from in the group to work to home relationships. And so the group conscience, mutual respect. What steps can each of us take to be respectful to others' ideas and opinions? What role does a loving higher power play in our conflict? How can we open our minds to hear what others are saying, knowing that our higher power will bring us to an informed group conscience?
Well, and thank you, Nicole. You can see that that respect would come directly from my opening comments concerning what is it that you believe about God. If, in fact, your beliefs parallel mine in some way, that it is the spirit underneath our spirit and life force, then every individual has that as its source. And that would be then the source of respect for the individual. All right. So thank you. That's good. Yeah. John, I see your hand hesitating, but I know it's been up before.
So I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
John.
Yes, along those lines and the little picture of the woman with the hearts. So I walked into a particular room in AA, and I witnessed very much a welcoming. You know, you're a newcomer, you're welcome, a lot of love and all that kind of stuff. And then one day I was furloughed from work, and I went to 7 different meetings all across Los Angeles. And the thing that I was struck by is that the spirit of the higher power, that there was something that was in each and every single one of those rooms, and it was similar. It was that welcoming, hand outstretched, a statement of responsibility that we all hold dear in the rooms of AA.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Okay. Any other highlights or comments? We're on the illustrated brochure. Anybody have any other? Please, Jackie.
Hi, I just highlighted something out of the illustrated one. It says, its voice is heard when a well-informed group gathers to arrive at a decision. And I've been at meetings where there is a dominant person kind of running over the meeting, and people kind of just go along with it. So they're not willing to hear everybody speak. They rush through a vote, and it's like, let's just get this over with. Okay, who wants to do it? It's done.
No,
and then what just happened?
Exactly. It's a democratic process. But it's sort of a pressure of the multitude in a way, and people are not that engaged or not that interested, and they certainly don't understand the group conscience process, which the key, as Jackie pointed out, is a well-informed decision. That's why George's comments are so important about the minority. Because if you hear one side of it and everybody goes, oh, yeah, because they're not that interested anyway. And then some one person who really is interested and informed gets up to inform people and they go, oh, the implications, the strategy, the knowledge. And they get a whole new take on it. And that's what, and that might take several weeks longer even sometimes for it to process. But then it's a well-informed group conscience. And without that, it's merely just a majority vote. And the group conscience is not a majority vote. Thank you very much, Jackie. Yeah, please, supplement.
Yes. If you could share any experience, it's not a majority vote in these meetings I'm referring to. It's one person who's dominating the group.
Right.
And then people are just not... don't have the backbone to stand up.
And
it happens so fast, and there is no 3 weeks later, let's talk about it some more. It's done. Well, how to deal with that?
You try to inform the group about an informed group conscience, and they might run you out of the city. But, but you know, it's like, I think you have to figure out, is this the mountain I want to die on? Huh? You know, it's kind of like, I don't agree with it, but it's not that important. Yeah.
I would go to a different meeting.
And you could do that, too, or start your own. Richard, please.
I'd like to share an experience. Richard, alcoholic.
Hey, Richard.
Many years ago, I was working in Washington, D.C., and I stumbled into a Quaker meeting, the meeting of the Friends, and they were having a group conscience that day. This was a fantastic experience. It was very spiritual. One of the issues that I find in our meetings, and one of the things I think enriches our society, is the experience is experience. We've had an opportunity. We've been around for a while, and we've had experience in how to do things. And Bill talks about that.
Why don't you stand on this side and turn the microphone this way? And I, yeah, thank you.
More useful.
There you go.
You can see this ugly mug. In the 12 and 12, Bill talks about the value of the people who've been around for a while. And what happens after a while, they try to run the place, and then it doesn't work, and they get pushed aside. And then the group begins to realize the value of their experience, and they become wise elders. I'm not applying for that job. Anyhow, back to the Quaker meeting. It was led by an elder, and he posed the question that the group was to decide that day. And people stood up one at a time, and they talked about what they believed should be done. And then sometimes there was silence for a while, and then someone would stand up. It was very patient. It was very patient and very spiritual. They were being moved. You could tell they were being moved by a power that was outside them. So all the talking got done, and there were people who had minority opinions, and finally the elder said, "My sense is that you want to do," and he laid out the answer to the question. And he said, "Is there anyone who wants to talk about that?" And somebody stood up and said something. "Anybody else?" "No." And the elder says, "Then that is what we will do." And I found out later by asking, "Well, what about the people that didn't want to do that?" He said, "What we believe is that regardless of your choice in this question, when the group decides it, everyone does it willingly, heartfelt, completely, because it's our choice. It's not my choice, your choice, his choice, but not her choice. It's our choice." What a spiritual experience it was. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. All right. So, yes, please. Why don't you leave it turned that way? They can address the group.
Feedback.
All right. All right. Thank you.
David, another bozo on the bus. Hey, I qualify for many programs here. And actually, I had that experience at one of those meetings, is that David, alcoholic, that, you know, what George was saying is that service structure really makes it really clear that, you know, the more service that you're doing, the more that you're of service to yourself and to the others, you're listening. And so you're listening. And I've been in meetings where the group conscience, where somebody's trying to dictate the bleeding deacons, I think they call it, where they're suppressing the other people in the group, that the group isn't that healthy. And I've observed this in other spiritual groups where not 12 steps, where the health of the group actually diminishes, and actually meetings close up because of that. Because people are not following those traditions, that group conscience. And to the question that you asked, absolutely, it's God's will. It's what happens.
What happens is God's will, but there's a process that could have a different outcome, and that then would be God's will also. So, yeah, it's an easy answer. It's all God's will. Mm-hmm. All right, so how about the 12 and 12? A little more grist for the mill. Page 132. Through, it's quite long, so I'm going to take it by the page, and we're going to look at each page. It's 6 pages, and we'll be looking at each page to see the highlights on the page. And so, anybody have any highlights on page 132? The only highlight I have is that we learned that the sole authority in AA is a loving God, as God may express himself in the group conscience, which is a repeat of the tradition itself. Let's go to page 133. Anything on that page? No highlights. It either means you didn't read it or you didn't think that there was anything worthwhile on it. All right? So my comments are, he feels a spiritual and ethical compulsion. I found that a terrific statement. A spiritual compulsion, which means there's an organic growth from you for this to evolve. He visits preachers, doctors, editors, policemen, and bartenders. It also then is revealing the proactivity of Bill and the early people. Now, this was written in 1946, 48, published in 52, but it talks about the being very proactive in going out to do the service work. Well, today, we primarily go to meetings, but there is a service facility within the structure called hospitals and institutions. And so that's another way. Oops. That's another way of going out and providing service on a proactive basis. Founders and their friends are sometimes wiser and more humble than this. That's sort of the ingredients of the elder that we've been talking about a little bit. An elder doesn't mean that you're old, although there is a correlation. Because we most of us human beings learn from our mistakes and the accumulation of our mistakes. And the only way you accumulate mistakes is you live long enough to try to correct some of them. We're passing the basket. You know the drill. We're a little light in attendance. We do need to make rent. So try to target the $5. And if you can't afford anything, don't pay it. And if you can afford more, drop it all in there. Page 134. Any highlights on that page? Please, Marvin. And so this is the way we will be conducting the workshop, is looking at the work that you've done, assuming that they've made some highlights and some questions or some experiences that you want to share, and we'll go through that. I'm going to try to get to the questions tonight so that we can have some more connection to experience in relationships. Please.
It's on the top. The founders and his friends are hurt and depressed. They rush from crisis to crisis and from member to member, pleading, but it's no use. The revolution is on. The group conscience is about to take over. And my name is Milton from Al-Anon. I went to two different churches before, and whatever the pastor was preaching out of the Bible, he would pick certain passages, and that's what the church went on. And I found that very depressing, and I didn't want to be involved in anything like that before. So when I came to the Al-Anon and I started realizing how spiritual it was, I was really happy and fascinated that we have a group conscience and that we let God take over.
So, yeah. There's no dogma.
Yeah.
And there's no official dogmatic person. There's lots of unofficial dogmatic persons.
Yeah. Right? But, you know, like change of leadership. So if we get one bozo for 6 months and then, you know, we get a better person afterwards, you know, it really works out for the benefit of the group.
Right. Well, and that's another point they make in some place in the literature that I've read, is they recommend every 6 months rotation of positions. And it just keeps it fresh and it keeps people from becoming vested in their position and then potentially misusing or abusing it.
Hi, Sandy, alcoholic. The other thing that it says is you're talking about rotation and what he just read about the revolution is on. And one of the definitions for the word revolution is to revolve.
Yes.
And so that it just continues. It's a circular thing. Yeah. And it's not like it gets somewhere. It just continues to revolve.
It keeps reflecting the dynamic of evolution. Right, that's right. I love the phrase... These wisdom people are servants, not senators. The leaders have a role of service. The elder statesman. On page 135, he contrasts that with the bleeding deacon. I mean, the polar opposites. They become, the elder statesmen become the real and permanent leadership in AA. Theirs is the quiet opinion, the sure knowledge and humble example that resolve a crisis. They become the voice of the group conscience. They lead by example. The group conscience is well advised by the elders and will be in long run wiser than any single leader. This is my highlights on page 135. Anybody on 136 or 137? It's really Bill's story of experience that he's bringing home this tradition. Anybody want to recap it in terms of the story? You rely on me to do that, all right? Bill is poor. Really dog poor. He and Lois have lost their house. They're living in the second story of the Alano Club, and she's working in a retail outlet for minimum wage at those days, and Bill's totally focused on helping others. And so he's at the hospital, Towns Hospital, and the owner says, Bill, I think you got something going here. I think you just basically invented Starbucks coffee. I mean, no, he saw it. He saw that the franchisability of what Bill was doing. These are my words. And he says, Bill, why don't you bring your program here to Towns Hospital? It'll pump some revenue into the hospital. You can be the lead consultant and counselor, and we'll give you a salary, and we'll give you a piece of the action. Well, Bill said, whoa. You know? That's a three strike. All right, I'm in. And on the train going back to his home, he's reviewing and meditating because there was something he didn't quite feel right about. So he needed to have it spiritually based, and he pulled on a line from the Bible: the worker is worthy of his hire. And Bill goes, there it is. It's I can quote the Bible on this one. It must be good. And he rushed into the home to tell Lois and the drunks that she was feeding at. And Lois said, Bill, sit down and eat. And literally. And he was explaining then to the alcoholics in his home at that time. And none of them were speaking. But one of them finally had the voice. He said, Bill, money will ruin this thing. This is a spiritual venture, all right? And you cannot do that. And they had a very big group discussion. And despite Bill's need and despite Bill's ego, he listened to the group and he turned it down. You know, thank God. That's the story that he relates here. And he gives us a phrase. He gives us a phrase here at the end, which I've actually used in the last 6 months for my own personal discernment. He says, the good is the enemy of the best. The good may be the enemy of the best. So each one of us has talents. Each one of us can do many things. On a scale of 1 to 5, we can do ones, which are just outrageously wonderful. And on the scale of 5 is still really good. People need it. It's useful. People will pay you for it. All right? But it's not as important as number 1. The good, number 5, is the enemy of number 1. Because to the extent that you use your time and talent on numbers 4 and 5, you don't have time and talent for number 1. which is your primary gift. I've been doing a discernment recently, for lots of reasons, about my activity. And I used the scale of 1 to 5. And 1 being my gift, my destiny, my passion. And there's no question as to what that would be. And everything else falling into 2, 3, 4, and 5, including the 2 part-time functions that I have with treatment centers. 1 function is a marketing function, and 1 function is spiritual counselor to the treatment center. And those ranked 4 and 5. And I resigned last week from both of them, because I can't be distracted from number 1. See, and that was a group conscience in the sense of my sponsor, my therapist, my spiritual director, and my wife. I vetted this concept with everybody to just make sure that it wasn't just some delusional reaction. And I'm really feeling a sense of freedom as the result. Please, Joe.
My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
It says, in no sense whatever can a members govern or direct the group. They are servants. There's sometimes thankless privileges of doing the group's chores. I had personal experience. I was a DCMC for 2 years, and directing the, just being the trusted, trusted servant. And a lot of times, my opinion would get in the way, and I'd have to sit back and let the group make their decisions and have their, talk about whatever discussed in that time. And I felt it was very hard to do that. And to reiterate some of the things that George was saying, the minority opinion, I would be able to sit and see a minority opinion, a small voice from the back, completely change the whole atmosphere of the room, change the chemicals in the room, have the flow change completely in a loving manner when people start to see something differently. And it really changes your mind. Yeah. But you have to sit in there, and you have to let your ego remove your ego. And I was always told that once you get to general service, a lot of times your butt's going to get chewed up. Your ego is going to get really chewed up, and it's painful. And I found that out. I found that out by just, I had to, work on my character defects. And that's some of the things why what was saying earlier, that when you go to a meeting, some meetings are sicker than other meetings. Yeah. In other words, they have their leaders that want to direct the meeting the way it is. And so what George just spoke about was the doing the group inventory. I sat in 2 group inventories. And when I left there, I mean, we felt we all bounced out of the room, because our purpose became a singleness of purpose. And we saw some of the things that were happening in the group conscious that we didn't think was appropriate. Yeah. So it was good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's wonderfully elevating. Thank you, Joe. I saw another hand, please.
Justin.
You
said, I what I picked up out of that was the last paragraph. So the group's conscience. The group was right and I was wrong. The voice on the subway was not the voice of God.
Read the rest of it, please.
Here was the true voice welling up out of my friends. I listened, and thank God I obeyed.
Thank you very much for reading that, because I looked up some words, and the Latin word obedere is to listen. It's the word that the English word obey comes from. To listen. Bill put it right here. I listened and then I obeyed. All right? In meditation, we listen for guidance, and then we respond. I don't use the term obey. I use the term we respond, because it's an invitation. Thank you very much, Justin. Any other comments on that part, please?
My name's Rob.
Hey, Rob.
I'm glad you pointed out the sentence, the good is the enemy of the best. That was actually the only thing in the chapter I highlighted besides the last paragraph. And the reason I thought it was so interesting, it's such an interesting turn of the phrase that I'm more familiar with, which is the perfect is the enemy of the good. And that's often used.
Oh, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And I can see that too.
And that's,
absolutely.
Right, that's used as a, aphorism. Don't be a perfectionist.
Right.
If you work too long on making it perfect, you'll never get anything done.
Right.
And this is essentially, this is the counterpoint. This is the balance of it.
Yes,
saying,
nice balance.
Don't settle for good enough. Sometimes good enough isn't good enough.
I certainly wasn't endorsing perfectionism, but I can see the counterbalance to that. Yeah. Thank you. Please. Yeah, the perfectionist is the person who will really never do, accomplish, or finish anything for fear that it won't be perfect. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Connie in Al-Anon.
Connie.
I just now put together two things, one from the language of the heart. And Bill said, many people are coming to think that Alcoholics Anonymous is to some extent a new form of society. And that just really struck me when I read that, thinking, what did that mean at that time in that place? And then I just connected that with this part in tradition too. I'm in a field where we talk about ethics a lot. And I think the 21st century perspective with the reality world that we have and this discussion of ethics has changed and what that really means. So I was really struck, bottom page 137, sure, the idea is ethical, the offer from the hospital, but what we've got won't run on ethics alone. It has to be better than ethics. And for somebody who's like defined my professional life by
all
ethics,
right.
I was like, what?
What does that mean? All
so,
right. All right. Well, what does it mean? For you?
I don't really know right at the moment, but I'm kind of excited about that idea that God's conscience in the program meeting room is better than ethics. And I think that's amazing.
Well, I could see the ethics being the good and spiritual principles being the best, right? Where they're would be a more of a spirit rather than maybe some literal interpretation. All right, let's go to the questions then. And you can see the questions are relating the tradition to our relationship in AA, our relationship at work, our personal relationships with family, and our personal relationship with friends. So rather than have you read any reflection that you wrote, assuming that you wrote some and that it might be lengthy, just share, like with question number four, what's your experience with doing that question, with reflecting on and answering that question? What is an authority? How do I relate to authority, especially in these four realms here, AA work, relationship and family, and relationship with friends. Anybody have an experience or reflection summary that they would like to share in that? It's challenging, and it takes some courage to share your vulnerability here. I'm asking you to do it to some extent. Anybody wants to? Please, John. Oh, and then Sarah. All right.
So I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. So in my work, I guide people. I consult people. And so when I first had the experience of consulting, it was all about me trying to show you how much I knew. And in the definition of authority that I came across, there's sort of this version of authority as sort of the upper, but then later there's some reflections of authority as something that actually people see in you, that it's not something that you can own, it's rather something that somebody might acknowledge you as.
Mm-hmm.
And so now coming to my work as that, I'm not looking to be the authority, I'm just trying to do my best at my work.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody chooses to see me as authority, then my chances of maybe, you know, getting another job or something like that improves.
Right, right. Yeah, you can be relied on. Right. Please. Yeah. Sarah.
I'm Sarah, and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Sarah.
I used to practice more as a psychotherapist than I do now, but I learned then that clients wanted to make me into an authority.
Yeah.
And it was very, and this was before I was in a program, but still, it was very important to me, whenever that happened, to put the power back in the person. And a lot of, in looking at these questions, it was so many of them were about being a voice for authenticity rather than accepting a position of authority for my qualities. I have qualities that I contribute and can be supportive with. But if I let my ego, you know, and sometimes it, you know, it wants to accept the authority, then I lose the power that I do have. But it's very important to me in my program and with friends and at work to support people's authenticity and make that difference between authority and authenticity.
And that would probably be the difference between a medical model where the doctor is the fixer healer and a spiritual model for therapy where you're the facilitator of them finding their own power. And the danger would be the ego taking on that authority thing. Yeah, nice.
As a sponsor.
Yeah. Oh, as a sponsor, for sure. I see it all the time, sponsors controlling or attempting to control. And sometimes with really good intention and sometimes just delusional. Richard. Well, and one of the things that you've heard me say that in terms of sponsorship, our role is to show them the way to God, and there are only two disciplines, very relevant to the group conscience and to this subject. One is God and one is alcohol, and you're either going for one or you're going for the other. We don't need disciplines. We already have it built into the system.
Richard, alcoholic.
Richard.
Thank you, Herb, for the guidance you're providing tonight. What is an authority? My answer is for in AA, for me, the big book and the 12 and 12, the group conscience, experience, tested experience, as is personified by people who've been through the ringer, and our common welfare. Those are the authorities for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. At work, this is a little bit glib, he who pays gets to choose. And that is, you know, it's the truth. However, I may choose to not be paid. Then I become the authority. In my personal relationships with my family, it's our common welfare. And I see myself as a servant in the family. That's my job, to be a server. And with friends, our mutual benefit. How do we each get something from the relationship that benefits both of us? Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Nicole?
Nicole Al-Anon. So mine was on the relationship between family, because my biggest relationship is still with my family. I'm the oldest, so I was always looked at as the authority figure in that respect, but then I instilled myself as the authority figure because, well, my parents are crazy and alcoholics. And so they also allowed me. They helped me do that. So it created a lot of confusion for self. But in working the steps, I'll back up a little bit. So they always would call me, and I'd be in the middle of all the conflict. And I would probably, I mean, more often now, having looked back, I acerbated it. because I'm not even in the same state and I'm trying to solve conflicts when I'm not even there. So it was all just based on gossip. And now nobody calls me unless they want my opinion on something to do with just them. They don't talk to me anymore about outside, about each other in the family. And that was all a direct result of setting boundaries and allowing God in between each and every relationship that I have. So there's no longer, I no longer have that authority figure in my family, and it's been a huge relief. But it isn't always easy because I still get to hear things and I still want to fix them. But that's what putting God in the middle and turning them over has done for me.
Yeah. The term authority comes from the word author, right? The source. Please.
I'm Rob, codependent.
Hey, Rob.
And I hope this is not too much of a minority opinion here, but I'm coming from...
Read it to the microphone.
Okay, I'm coming from a statement on the bottom of the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. And we have down here, okay, the price and process is self-sacrifice and self-renunciation. And I'm in CODA, and a problem in my life has always been looking for the welfare of others and not taking care of myself. So I have a little tension here with these ideas of self-sacrifice and self-renunciation. And I appreciate the idea that we have qualities. Okay, how does this relate for me to this question of authority? Well, okay, I'm going to make a statement here, but it's like, okay, what is good for me? What is truly good for me is good for everybody. You know, it's like what is good for General Motors is good for the country. But if it is good for me in the ultimate sense, like this is God's will, okay, then it's good for all. And the point is, okay, the authority in this case is my inwardness speaking to me what God wants me to do. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have to check it out with other people and put it around, but I'm not going to listen to the voices outside. I want to listen to my own voice.
Yeah, and I think there's a balance of getting guidance from our inside, our intuitive, wee small voice, as well as getting guidance in terms of sounding board from people's opinions who are credible people with experience behind their opinions. And there's a balance. In the final analysis, we're responsible for our lives, and I have to agree. I mean, St. Augustine said, it doesn't matter. Love God and do whatever you want. Notice, love God and do whatever you want. Because if, in fact, you truly love God, what you do will be the benefit to you and your relationship with God and the entire community of humanity.
The words like self-sacrifice and self-renunciation are words that are very difficult for me to swallow, and I prefer the word self-realization. That doesn't mean I'm getting rid of the bad things, but it means the true inner goodness of myself is being released because I'm able to get rid of these character defects and so forth. So I'm not, and it hinges upon the idea that the self that is being realized is my divine self, and that's good. So,
well, one of the, this is a longer discussion that we need to have right now, but we're really talking about what do you mean by self? In the self-sacrifice, self-renunciation, we're talking about the false self. All right? In the self-realization, we're talking about the true self. Hugely different. One is their persona, the mask that we have created, the Hollywood storefront. That's the false self that we blow apart in the fourth step and identify what is the true self by then doing steps 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and having a spiritual awakening. And that's not an event, it's a process. And in my own case, it took probably 10, 12 years to bring it to what I consider to be a maturity. Not that it's ever over, because it's never over, but sort of the gross things were dealt with. Now it's just fine-tuning. Thank you very much, Rob, please. Mary Jo, just tilt it down a little bit.
Okay. Well, I don't do well with authority. I haven't my entire life. And so it was, you know, I just kind of, I'm better than I was. But when I got to AA and I saw that, you know, there was groups that I had to hang out in, and then I had to get along better at work, and I had to do different things to, you know, have a better life. I kind of would, can I just jump down to the prayer, Herb? Because kind of.
Please, that'd be great.
Okay. God, you are the ultimate authority, and I trust that your will for others is the best, that your love for us all, I hope, will help us to become better people and live in harmony and unselfishness.
Yeah.
That kind of.
Yeah.
Is how I feel about this situation.
Thank you. Notice how the structure of the assignments is to do some reading from the literature, then to do some reflections from your own experience, and then to combine both the readings from the literature and your own experience into some prayer that is reflective of the spirit of the tradition. So if you follow that sort of technique, sort of learning, I think you'll have a different experience with it, as several of you have sharing, have obviously had. All right, so let's move on to question number 5. I think that's the one here. And that would be, write a paragraph about how I acknowledge God as my ultimate and loving authority. How open am I to God's expression of God's self in others and in the following? AA, at work, my personal relationships with family and friends. This is now God as the ultimate and loving authority. It's kind of a combination of tradition 2 and step 2 for sure. Anybody have any comments, experiences, resistances about this? And they would like to share with us. Please. There we go. A new voice. There's no right or wrong answer here, you see. This is really tapping in now to your personal reflections and experiences and how to make the traditions come alive for you, not in AA, but in your life. Please.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Barbara Al-Anon and also alcoholic addict.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. So I love you said resistance too, because this has been a big one for me. At my work, I've had actually the honor and privilege to work with children that die of cancer, and it's been a huge spiritual crisis in my recovery, and just about kind of firing God and deciding that the God I had actually wasn't loving enough and big enough, and I still struggle with it sometimes, but. What I've come to is that I'm not God, because I used to want to be God in that situation and fix things for people, and why would God ever do such a horrible fucking thing, because that was my opinion, sorry to curse. So I felt really buried, actually, and it's actually when my drug addiction took off was in that context. But one of the things about acknowledging of myself, of not being so powerlessness and also not being God, is being able to be a servant in a situation that can be really vulnerable, difficult, sad for people, to find love in myself and to find that loving God in a space that sometimes doesn't seem to exist. And also it helps me in my Al-Anon program too, to realize that I'm not God and that I need to allow for a space for people to sort that out for themselves, as I too get to sort that out in that moment, and I get to see these wonderful opportunities of of love expressed, whether it's a husband, like two people that, I mean, I'm assuming they've been married for years and his wife is dying and he stands at her bedside holding her hand and just loving her. And so there is a loving God. There, I get to see that acknowledged too sometimes. So I still resist the concept because I'm not going to lie. There are times when I do want to play God in that setting, especially with children. But I find that if I can find in myself a place of, and I think the tradition talked about it, of servitude. I don't mean it like I'm enslaved, but of being a servant for God's love in that moment and just be present without, you know, the Al-Anon wanting to blah, 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 fix things for you and I'm going to make it better. Then I can find God in myself too, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Anyway. Thank you very much for sharing. Yeah. Wonderful. Any other expressions from question number 5? How about question number 6? Consider and write a reflection about what degree of trust in God's will for others that I possess. Trust in God's will for others that I possess. Do I trust God will be a part of the various groups I am a part of? How do I demonstrate that trust when things don't go my way? Please, George.
George Bell, alcoholic. This is actually sort of between 5 and 6. I had an experience. You know, general service has really been a major factor in my growth. Let me start out with that. I've been involved in general service a long time. And I mean, just I'm looking at this, there's so many ways that I have grown as a result of experiences there. Not all of them really pleasant. This one particular time, I was called upon to take over the treasury of the West Side Districts. It's about $20,000 a year cash flow. And the person who had had it left it in poor condition. It was all messed up and, you know, called upon me to help. And so I straightened it all out. I had forgotten, actually, through my drinking that I did have a background in accounting. And I got the books perfect. I mean, they were so good. And then I rotated out. And the next person, guess what? Started doing things very differently and changed the whole structure and everything. And I looked at that, and by then I had a little bit of experience, and I just said, oh. And I waited, and, you know, AA survived. And I realized that, you know, it really wasn't up to me. You know, there was another instance where something similar to that happened, where someone just completely changed around everything I did. And it was right the way I did it. It was the best way, the way I did it. But you know what? The way someone else did it was fine. And I came to accept that. I mean, I actually really didn't have that much trouble with it. And things went on smoothly enough. So.
Yeah. Thank you. Please, Rob.
The question, number 6, the statement that really I had an aha about is, do I trust that God will be part of the various groups I am a part of? And I realize that there's a big disconnect for me with my 12-step groups and things like work, you know, work groups or collaboratives at work. And I actually was, I started answering by writing a question. What degree of trust should I have in groups that express no interest in or do not purport to be spiritual entities, which every AA group is ought to be a spiritual entity? It's in another tradition. So, you know, I had to then reflect on my own question and sort of answer my question. And I realized that if I actually was questioning God's presence or God's work in any group, then I was sort of challenging God's eminence, you know, his presence, his relevance, you know, his activity in human affairs. And I realized that was a lack of humility on my part. And I thought about it from a perspective of humility. I guess I have kind of two responsibilities in whatever group I'm working with, a work group, you know, a occupational group or whatever it is. You know, one is that, you know, I am willing to accept the group conscience as representing his authority, whether or not I agree with it. And two, I think this is something that I think Kim had said right at the beginning, which is humility also gives me a responsibility to speak up if I don't agree, because, you know, sometimes I just want to check out, right? And if I don't like how this is going, so you do whatever the hell you want. I'm not even part of this anymore. I'm just sitting here, you know? And that's ego as well, you know? I mean, if God can speak through any members, then God can speak through me as well. And if I'm not willing to share my own voice, then I'm not willing to speak for my higher power. And that's not right either. So I have the responsibility to accept the outcome, but I have the responsibility to participate and share what I truly believe in a respectful way. So that's what I came to through working through that question six.
Who would have ever got your own way? When you don't get your own way and speak?
When I don't, pardon?
Like you said about having a voice. And when you don't get your own way because you decided to be brave and speak up.
Right.
What happened?
Oh, well, I have to accept it for then. And then realize that if this group is a spiritual, if this group is a, you know, I'm thinking of work generally. So if this work group is a spiritual entity, then first of all, they have a right to be wrong, just like every group has a right to be wrong. But through trial and error and growth and evolution, the group will eventually align with the authority's will, with God's will. I have to trust that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Please. Well, we got to and through lots of the questions tonight, and we will continue with that kind of rigor. I really appreciate your listening to the suggestions at the beginning and cooperating with it.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm an alcoholic. The step six, and it talks about consider and write a reflection about the degree of trust in God's will for others. It brought me right down this section in 12 and 12 under step 11. It says on page 104, sometimes we're tempted to think we know God's will for other people. We say to ourselves, this one ought to be cured of this fatal malady, that one ought to be relieved of his emotional pain, and we pray for these things, these specific things. Such prayers, of course, are fundamentally good, but often they are based on the supposition that we know it's God's will for that person for whom we're praying. There is a certain amount of presumption and conceit in us, and it is by my experience that I have often found that the most tragic things that I have experienced in my life have been the greatest gifts. And often when I go to a group consensus or a group consciousness taken and it doesn't go my way because I'm kind of opinion and a little arrogant, and often it doesn't go my way because, you know, I'm a little headstrong, what I have learned is that in the long run, it goes exactly the way it's supposed to be. And I currently belong to a group of people that have a lot of structure and a lot of traditions and a lot of rules. And what I found is that the greatest number are served based on the way they've learned to do things more than the way I think I should be doing things. So,
yeah, thank you very much for sharing that. All right. Yeah, Alex, one more. All right.
So this is a little bit, possibly five, maybe seven, and it's just a reflection that I was thinking about while listening to everybody talk. And I'm noticing that right now I am going through a lot of struggles, and I have kind of given myself this boundary of just to assume that everything's happening for a reason. And as a codependent, I want to problem solve and figure it out. And I hurt myself so much by dwelling and thinking and reflecting back and trying to figure it out ahead of time. And I've given myself this rule to just trust it's all the way it's going to be. Don't think about the future. Don't think about the past. And I'm finding so much serenity and peace, and everything is just, the sun rises again and the next day is beautiful, and I get to process and figure out the next step one day at a time. And I think this really goes along with the that authority of just relinquishing my sense of God internal sense of God, that I am the higher power, but just trusting and trusting that everything will be okay. Everything does end up being okay. So that's my experience.
Thank you. And, you know, that reminds me, both of your last share reminded me of what broke the code for me, which I shared with you who are in the step workshop with me about the 11th step. When this man, who is not in the program, but a very spiritual man, said to me, Herb, you're responsible for the effort. The results are none of your business. Both of you said the same thing. It's kind of like, do the best you can and detach from the process and the results and just trust that God's in the mix. So the message underneath is really trust in God. And that's the reflection question perhaps for you to take from here today and go into this, the third tradition, and prepare for our discussion for next week. Now, next week, I assume we'll be back in the other place. I like this place, but I don't think it's available to us at the right price for us. They gave us a little taste of upgrading and teased us. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there, and for that, we are responsible. After a moment of silence, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. There's flyers on the workshop, this one, and on the step workshop coming up in January back there. Do the assignment 3, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.